This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Farrah.com. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So this is a crazy story. This is an incredibly scary story. It's something that happened to a 7-Eleven clerk in Seattle recently. And when it was all said and done, the clerk wondered whether or not they contracted HIV. And this entire story is yet another symptom of a bigger issue. The issue of the city of Seattle and their unwillingness to enforce basic laws on homelessness. This is not an issue about cops, because the cops are told not to actually enforce the law. They're not allowed to enforce the law. And the city only basically allows people to follow the law, to enforce the law. They only allow it when you've gotten almost to the point of a murder. Like, right at that point, that's when they step in and say, okay, yeah, maybe we should do something. And even then, by the way, that's not always the case, because we've had one homeless dude try to throw people over a freeway overpass, what, four times now? So in this case, we're talking about a 39-year-old homeless man, William Ludwig. He was charged with assault after biting a clerk at a downtown Seattle 7-Eleven store. According to Cairo 7 TV, Ludwig tried to walk out of the store. It's on First Avenue and Cherry Street, which is actually a 7-Eleven I've been to. And he tried to leave without paying for a six-pack of beer. By the way, that's the kind of homeless person you really need to root for, right? The person who's just, who, no fault of their own, living out on the streets. They're just like you and me. They're trying their best to get a job, to get back on the right path, when they're not busy trying to steal a six-pack of beer from a 7-Eleven. Now, at that point, the store clerk tried to pull it back, tried to get it back. And at that point, Ludwig bit the clerk's right arm. Then a customer intervened, put Ludwig in a headlock, trying to protect the clerk from this crazy person. Cairo 7 TV says, according to documents, surveillance video showed the customer struggling with Ludwig, and they both fell into the sidewalk outside of the store. Now, the police said something sad. They said this customer, as he was struggling with Ludwig, as this clerk presumably was trying to take care of the biting wound, as this went on for about 2 minutes straight, Ludwig then turned to the customer that he had bitten, or excuse me, the clerk that he had bitten, and said that he has AIDS. Ludwig said he had AIDS. He was doing this as a scare tactic and as a ploy to get out of the headlock. At that point, the customer let this guy go, because that's certainly not something that you should have to deal with in the city of Seattle. That's why we have police officers. Ludwig leaves the scene, and then he gets picked up a few blocks away by Seattle police. Now, police said when they later spoke with the clerk told them he had to go to the hospital, where he was told a bone in his foot had been broken during the struggle. Now, I'm presuming he had an HIV test. There's no indication that this clerk nor this homeless person actually has HIV. That's my assumption, because it's not being reported, but I'm not entirely sure. Now, finally, prosecutors got involved. They set his bail, or asked for his bail to be set at $50,000. And here's what we learned. This guy's from out of state. This guy has mental health issues. This guy has substance abuse issues. This guy is homeless. And this guy is a criminal. He has a criminal history. Criminal history. Imagine for a moment, just for a moment, what the city would be like if we properly punished these bad guys and then treated them for their illnesses. Imagine for a moment what Seattle would be like if we actually enforced the law and provided treatment to these people who are in desperate need of it. This would not have happened to this poor clerk at the 7-Eleven, and the city wouldn't be turning into what it's turning into. Cops would be happier because they're actually able to do their jobs. You and I would be happier because we're able to walk on a city street without having to run around needles, human waste, tents all over the place, people just passed out in front of us. We wouldn't have to smell the scent of urine in Capitol Hill or in Pioneer Square when all we're trying to do is walk on over to CenturyLink Field or T-Mobile Park. I guess that's a little bit too much to ask for in the city of Seattle. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Now, speaking of Seattle, because this does, in fact, impact people who don't live here, we had a bit of a lull in people looking for apartments and renting apartments in Seattle. And as a result of that, the prices started to drop. Well, Seattle is now seeing an increase in renters. In fact, the Seattle Times says that we're seeing the fastest rate of occupying empty units than anywhere else in the entire state. What does that mean? It means there's high demand. What happens when supply runs out and demand goes up? Say it with me. Say increase rents with me, okay? You ready? Say it. Wait till I do that. You ready?
Okay. Ready.
What happens?
Increase rents.
Wait till I set it up and then do it, okay? What happens when supply runs out? Increase rents. Never mind. You're the worst. Increase rents. It's basic supply and demand. And so what does this mean? It means we're going to have even bigger conversations about people complaining about the cost of living in Seattle. People are going to whine even louder. And I think we have to separate out two different sort of categories. People who legitimately can't afford to live here, and then we can talk about that. And then people who just want to pay less. Now, I don't particularly think either is incredibly important in the grand scheme of things. Now, the council thinks differently because they love to pander to the people who claim that they're really concerned about the cost of living. Understand there's a difference between wanting lower rent versus not being able to afford it. Who out there who's a renter, who out there that's a renter doesn't want to pay less? Is there anyone who's like, actually, I'm the weird one. I'd like to pay more. I'm getting a steal with this apartment. You should easily be charging me at least $600 more a month. No, every single person wants less. Same way with your mortgage. How many of you wish you could pay smaller amounts on the mortgage, right? How many of you wish that you owed less money? Now, simply saying lower rent, wanting lower rent, doesn't mean that housing is unaffordable. I would like to pay $500 less. I would like to have free apartment. I would love it. I would love to not have to pay anything. That doesn't mean I can't afford the rent. In fact, I can't afford the rent. The reason why I know I can afford the rent is because I can pay it and not be put out on the street because I didn't pay that bill, right? I'm paying that bill. So I'm done with the people, particularly the activist class, the ones who live in Capitol Hill, like, oh my God, it's so expensive. I can't afford to live in this Capitol Hill apartment. I can't. Why can't you? It's so much. But you can't afford it, though. I mean, you can technically afford it. Well, I mean, yeah, but I don't want to. Okay, I don't care about you. And then, of course, you turn to the person who says, I can't afford to live in this neighborhood. Okay. Then you can't afford to live in that neighborhood. Can you afford to live in Northgate? Yeah, but I don't want to. Okay, well, that's too bad. You don't have a right to live wherever it is you want. Understand that that's really what all of these conversations have been about. This whole idea that it's unaffordable. There is a very, very small percentage of people who legitimately can't afford to live anywhere in the city of Seattle, right? Now, I don't know if that's a problem, per se. Is that a problem? I can't afford to live in certain cities. I can't afford to live in Beverly Hills. I can't. I can't afford to live in Brentwood in California. I can't. I can't afford to live in Medina here in Western Washington. I just can't afford it. It is out of my price range. Why is that a problem? Why is that a problem? Now, some people will come out there and they'll say, well, it's a problem because we need to have these workers live near the places where they work. Why shouldn't the barista or the janitor or the store clerk live where they work? Because it's not a right. You have no right to do that. I mean, that's why. That's part of it. And you do realize that if you're a barista or a janitor or a clerk at a store, you can certainly get another job in another neighborhood that maybe you can, in fact, afford because this is a type of job that requires few skills, right? This is not a job that requires you have a 4-year degree in physics. You're literally making coffee. There are lots of coffee shops all over the place. So tell me, can you afford to live in Marysville or Mukilteo or Everett or Milton, the gem of Pierce County, or wherever? If the answer to that is yes, well, then there's not a housing affordability crisis. The crisis is you wanting to live somewhere you can't afford. That's on you. That's on you. That is not the problem of anyone who lives in a city. That's not the problem of the city government. That's not the problem of the state government. That is your problem. You do not have a right to live wherever it is you want. Shocking, I know. Especially because we now live in a place, in a time, where just because you want something, apparently we're supposed to placate your every need, your every desire. We don't want to make the millennial upset. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, we are on Instagram. If you want to get a nice little tour of the studio, we're going to be doing that a little bit later on in the evening, in the afternoon. Go on Instagram, search for the name Jason Rantz, give me a follow, then check out all of the stories that we post via the Instagram stories. Instagram, Jason Rantz, JSONRANTZ. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
Stupid Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez put a bad idea in our head. She told us not to eat so many burgers. That instantly made us want to eat lots and lots and lots of burgers. I actually had a burger today for lunch, minus the bread. It was very delicious. In fact, ever since AOC started talking about not eating burgers, I've just been on this kick of wanting to eat as many burgers as humanly possible. And actually, it's not just me who's been inspired. Producer Tom has been inspired. Thank you, AOC, because now we're trying to find the best burger in Seattle.
Maybe we shouldn't be eating a hamburger for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Tom Amato here, and I'm back with another burger review. A number of you recommended Sam's Tavern as a place to check out, so I went to their location in South Lake Union and ordered the Sam's 50 burger, and it was the first time I've ever had avocado on a burger. This is another 60-second burger review brought to you by the Jason Rantz Show. Well, not being a huge Cotto guy, I could tell that this was artfully spread on the bun. Enough to influence the taste, but not too much to overrule it. I can tell how some restaurants could mess that up. Not this one. As I was eating it, I couldn't figure out why I was filling up so quick. Then I remembered, avocado is full of fiber. Duh. It's been known to be a bit of an appetite suppressant. Cotto facts! The burger is 50% Angus beef, 50% hickory smoked bacon, and cooked to medium. It comes with Gouda, Cotto, buttermilk, bacon ranch, and more bacon. It's definitely a breakfasty kind of bacon, so it's a little more chewy, and the burger is juicy enough. It's served in a bun so soft, you'll think you're eating a dinner roll. The size is fine, but the taste does wear on you a bit, and the fries are no good, so you'll have trouble dealing with the same taste for roughly 10 minutes. For all my sports fans out there, this is a great sports bar. Go there for a Hawks game and order the Sam's 50 burger, and you'll have a great time. There is a bit of a problem, though. You're paying $15 for the burger, so you're toeing the line on if you're getting your money's worth. I'll give it a 7.5 out of 10. What do you think of their burger? Where should I go next? Tweet me, at New Producer Tom. This has been another 60-second burger review brought to you by the Jason Rantz Show.
So there you have it. That's yet another review from a place I told you to actually go. I've been to Sam's Tavern. I go there, well, I order from there pretty frequently. It's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Sam,
first of all, by the way, if you ever say Cotto again, I'm not kidding, and I want you to take this seriously. Look me in the eyes as I say this. If you say Cotto ever again, I'm going to stab you in the heart.
Well,
no. This is just, all you have to do is acknowledge the deeply unprofessional threat, accept it as a reality, and then never do that again.
Hold on.
I need you to accept what I just said.
All right.
You can't go upstairs to HR. I will physically stab you. I'm not talking metaphorically. I will take any sharp object around me and stab you in the heart repeatedly if you say Cotto again. Okay?
I think.
No. The correct answer is understood. Other than that, avocados are amazing. It's actually the fat that makes you satiated, not necessarily the fiber. The fiber plays a little bit of a role. It depends. They didn't put that much avocado on it for you to truly be satiated from the fiber. But it's a fantastic burger. Sam's Tavern is fantastic. So again, if anyone has any other recommendations for spots for producer Tom to eat on my dime, because I'm the one paying for this, text us at 1-800-465-8770. Give us your recommendations. He usually goes to places that you recommend. Or you can send him a tweet at New Producer Tom on Twitter. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So maybe it's because I'm Jewish. I didn't realize that this weekend was Easter. I know a lot of people who are Jews, and we just aren't thinking about this. Today's Good Friday, and then Easter is this weekend. But it turns out there's also another major holiday for certain people this weekend. It's 420 tomorrow. Tomorrow is 420. That is the time when stoners get together and get high, and then some of them stupidly decide that, hey, I think I'm going to get into a car and drive. Cairo 7 TV's Ranji Sinha has more.
We all like to smoke.
Javante says a visit to Western Washington may include a chance to mark the counterculture cannabis holiday, 420. And if it does, it will not include driving.
I relate it to alcohol, so like whenever we smoke, I don't go out, we don't drive.
The Washington State Patrol knows many people will smoke pot on 420, so they will have extra patrols to keep things safe.
If they're going to use, they're use cannabis or drinking too, think, have a plan.
When 420 landed on a Saturday last time nationwide on the roads, they saw collisions spike to levels that authorities say they normally see after the Super Bowl.
Wow. Okay. So they're adding extra DUI patrols. And how about this? So they are giving a little bit of facelift to this mobile unit that they have. It's called the drug they have what's called drug recognition experts. They're on board these units so they can do some of the legal blood draws then and there and process your blood so they can build stronger cases against any of you who are out there with DUI, whether we're talking about marijuana or whether we're talking about alcohol. So here's a takeaway for tomorrow. Do yourself a favor if you're going to smoke weed or do the CBD thing with THC. Why don't you take an Uber or a Lyft? Although, can I just say this one thing without getting in any trouble whatsoever? And here's the caveat of what I'm about to say. Nothing that comes out of my mouth about this topic should be construed as supporting you doing what it is I'm about to say. Okay? Is that understood? All of you have to sign a waiver before you continue listening. Good. Okay. I read a study that suggests when you're driving in certain situations and you're high, it's actually not all that bad. And I think it has to do with, one, in the context of comparing it to driving while drunk, which is much, much, much more unsafe than driving while high on marijuana. I read the study that suggested in certain scenarios, when you smoke, what happens when you're smoking?
You're listening to reggae?
That's true. Okay. I did not consider that. But what about your state of mind? Say paranoid.
You're paranoid.
You're totally paranoid. That is one of the side effects of weed. And so when you're high and you get paranoid and you know that you're high and you realize that you're paranoid and you realize you're in a car that you're not supposed to be in, this study suggested the paranoid people are looking at the speed limit and like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I can't. Better not speed. If I speed, I'm going to get pulled over, and then I'm going to get a ticket. I can't speed. I got to go but speed limit. Now, generally, they tend to drive slower than the actual speed limit, which can, in fact, cause some problems on the road that can also be unsafe in certain scenarios. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. Again, not to suggest that you should go ahead and drive while high. I don't believe that. But, you know, we talk about it in the sense of comparing it to DUI in a traditional alcohol-fueled sense, and it's just not as bad, according to some studies. Now, maybe there's been a new study since. I just like this study so much, I don't want to look up and see if there are any newer studies. Just throwing that out there. I did this event for SDOT and Lyft this week for 420 awareness, because they want people to take Lyft instead of driving while stoned. And I have got photos of this I'm going to post on the Facebook page and Instagram later, but they put weed goggles on. You know how there's booze goggles where you see through the goggles as if you're under the influence of alcohol? So they have the same exact thing, but they do it with for how you're impaired via weed. And they tried to have us stand and like go in a straight line, heel to toe, count number 10. A Seattle police officer was there. He was guiding us the entire way. And so they put on the goggles. Now, I could barely walk. I've got the video of it that I'll post. I could barely walk straight. But it's a little bit of a cheat. I would have had to gotten so stoned. I would have had so much weed in my system for it to be that bad. So then I started to wonder, and this is the exact opposite of what they would want me to do. I wondered, well, what happened if I just took a little bit? Like one hit or two hits. I wonder if I can do it. Because you would have had to completely consume all of the weed in Uncle Ike's to get as high as those goggles made you.
That's an incredible story.
Okay. You don't want to see the video?
No, sure, but...
I don't have to post the video if you don't want me to. Yeah. I thought it was funny because I almost fell down. And then I got nervous because there was a stairwell nearby, and I was telling the cop, like, isn't there a stairwell coming? Can you get in front of us so we don't fall down?
Makes sense.
And then he pushed me down the stairwell, and it was all caught on video.
Yeah.
I'm going to post it on Instagram and on Facebook. Instagram, Jason Rantz, or Facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rantz Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local is really, really easy to understand. The media is hyper-focused on Seattle, so they end up ignoring all of the important stories and interesting stories happening all across the state of Washington. So what do? The exact opposite. We focus on you, the communities you live in, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start around Lynnwood, where Sound Transit is cutting down about 5,300 trees, and they're doing that for the expansion of light rail. Now, we've had this conversation, in fact, earlier in the week. We talked about it because it just seems really easy for Sound Transit to go ahead and do this, cut down 5,300 trees. But if you or I wanted to cut down a single tree, literally one tree on our own private property, sometimes that could take months to figure out because of the bureaucracy. They won't let us just cut down a tree. It seems rather ridiculous. Well, now we have a crazy lady who's mourning the death of the trees.
They are beings.
Are they, though? That's Isis Cheris. She's a member of Tree Sisters, and she spoke to our sister station, Cairo Radio, and the Dory Monson Show.
I belong to a group called Tree Sisters, and we are all about understanding trees and having a better relationship with them.
Okay. I mean, I suppose it's good to understand trees in a traditional sense of, like, this is how a tree grows. This is what trees do. I don't really need to have a relationship with trees, if only because I don't want to get that bush all upset. But because they take... That was a good joke. Shut up. That was funny.
Well,
that was just off the... You shut up. Shut up with your stupid cottos. But of course, because they want to have better relationships, and arguably these folks have really good relationships, a little inappropriate with trees, they ended up organizing a pray-in over the trees being destroyed by Sound Transit.
We say cut down like it was no big deal, but basically 5,300 trees are being killed.
Okay, they're not being killed. It's not a murder. You do know that they're not people, right? Although maybe they don't think... Maybe they think they're the equivalent of people.
I did a ritual for some trees down at Green Lake many years ago when they were cutting down all the cottonwoods, and the trees screamed when they were cut down.
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. In fact, in her honor, we're going to do a real quick bit. Tom, I want you to go outside. I want you to cut down a tree and tell me if it makes a sound.
On it.
Okay, so we'll check back with you in just a few minutes. Get the Rantz branded chainsaw.
The one in the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. Because at least, I mean, if you're going to cut these stupid trees down, you might as well promote the
this
show at the same
time. This tree cutting ceremony is brought to you by the Jason Rantz Show.
There you go.
770-KDDH.
Okay, do that. We'll check back with you in a few seconds because I want to know, basically, whether or not the tree is cut down and it screams. When we have a situation like this, on the one hand, I do obviously want to mock this woman because I'm literally doing that now. But on the other hand, like, should we be scared of her? And, you know, this is the funny thing. In the back of my mind, very far in the back of my mind, I do wonder, what if she's right? What if trees are the equivalent of human beings and they are going to scream when we cut them down and she's just one of the few people who are gifted enough to hear it? What if she's the one who's correct? I watched The Happening, the poorly reviewed M. Night Shyamalan movie. I was the only one who I think liked it. It freaked me out. What if she's right? Okay, we're checking back in with producer Tom. Did it scream?
It did not want to be cut down. It took the chainsaw. It actually... Oh, no, here it comes! Here it comes! It's taking me!
Be careful. I told you to wear goggles! Why? Did it cry?
It took the chainsaw and... Okay, no, it didn't. It did not cry. I was joking, all right?
It didn't cry.
Didn't cry.
Okay, here's what I want you to do. Go see that tree over there?
Yeah.
Cut that one down and let's see if because that might be a different kind of tree. Maybe that tree was already dead.
Okay.
And it did like its soul was already gone. So we'll go cut down that tree and then you can tell me if it cried. Meanwhile, in the city of Renton, they move forward today, actually, in dedicating a post office in honor of rock legend Jimi Hendrix.
One
yeah!
On the watchtower.
The watchtower. Good for them. In an effort that took years in the making, Congress finally sealed the deal last December, unanimously passing the measure to dedicate the post office to Jimi Hendrix. Hendrix was born in Renton. He went to Garfield High School. And his coolness will now be remembered in the pinnacle of cool, the post office, because I guess the DMV office was already named after Kurt Cobain. So they officially did that today, and I still have the same question to which no one has been able to provide for me an answer, which is, did Jimi Hendrix want a post office to be named after him? Is there any connection to the post office for Jimi Hendrix? Like, did he go there a lot as a kid? Was this, like, was he really kind of dweeby and nerdy and like stamps? I don't quite understand why we decided this particular building would be called the Jimi Hendrix Post Office, but okay. I mean, that's cool. I don't have a post office named after me, and he does, so I guess I'm not one to talk about it. Okay, now we're going to check in again with producer Tom, who's out there in the elements. Is you just cut down the tree?
Yeah, Jason, I'm out here in the elements, and I cut down the tree.
Did it cry?
It did not cry.
Okay, do me one more favor. I want you to go to that other tree. You see the one that I'm talking about? The one that's about 30 feet from you?
Yeah.
Cut that tree down and then all the trees around it and tell me at the end of this if those cried. Because we're going to find the crying trees because this woman is super passionate about it. We're going to find them.
On it.
Okay. Finally, after the ludicrous, though I will say narrow, court case in the Ninth Circuit, the City of Federal Way says, hey, we're not changing anything. We're not actually impacted by the way we're choosing to handle homelessness. Now, this ruling, and it came out of Boise, Idaho, it basically says, hey, you can't kick people off of the street unless you have a bed for them to go to within city limits. Now, it is still incredibly narrow, but it basically says that. So the City of Federal Way is all like, hey, we don't criminalize homelessness. They did that maybe in Idaho and Boise. We don't do that here. What we do is periodically clean them up, these tent encampments, because, well, there's human waste, there's needles, there's trash and whatnot, and we need to do that. So the Federal Way Mirror is implying that actually the Federal Way government does criminalize homelessness. And they point to the fact that the city prohibits outdoor camping. So they're going after the city, they're trying to prove that the city, I guess, is in violation of the law. I just wonder, from the Federal Way Mirror's perspective, to what end? Why exactly are you doing this? Because what you end up doing is normalizing camping outside, wherever it is they want. You end up normalizing the homelessness scenario that's unfolding in Federal Way, the same way it's unfolding all across Washington State. And you're not actually helping the city get people off the street. Shouldn't all of our goals be to get them off the street, get them into housing, get them into treatment if they need it, get them into different, I don't know, jobs, training programs, educational services, so we can put them on the path to living a sustainable life without having to rely on the government? Shouldn't we do that? Now, obviously, it's the Federal Way's prerogative how they choose to cover this story, but just understand the way that they're choosing to cover this story will mean more people will live out on the street. If the Federal Way Mirror is correct in all of this, the end result will be some kind of lawsuit that will force Federal Way to stop trying to clean up and address the homelessness situation. Now, if that's what the Federal Way Mirror wants to do, like I said, they have freedom of press. They can do what it is they want. I just think we would all be better served by getting people off of the street. Okay? Call me crazy. Let's check in one more time with producer Tom. Producer Tom, how many trees now have you cut down in total? How many trees in total have you cut down?
I mean, not like a ton, maybe like 10.
Okay, so you cut down 10. Inspired by the woman who is mourning the loss of trees, but she said the tree. Did any of the trees cry the way she said?
No trees. No trees cried.
I thought I heard a yelp. Was that you? You got a cut, didn't you?
I'm not very good with a chainsaw.
Yeah, you got a splinter. Doofus. Okay, so it turns out that the trees don't cry. I'd like to let you spend the next commercial break just mowing down every single tree until we find one.
Yeah.
Because that's what she would want us to do, tree lover.
Do we need a permit for this?
I'd probably have whatever.
All right, well, whatever.
Sound Transit doesn't need one, we don't. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. BuzzFeed last year breathlessly reported and then really hardcore defended this report that claimed Donald Trump told Michael Cohen to lie to Congress. It was a huge story. CNN picked it up and breathlessly reported it. So did MSNBC. They all parroted this report. And then they helped do defense for BuzzFeed when BuzzFeed was called out, not just by the Trump campaign, but the Mueller team also said that this was not true. It was a lie. And yet, despite the Mueller team coming out, BuzzFeed continued to push and defend. And they had the help of CNN's Brian Stelter, who did a rather softball interview with one of the co-writers of this piece, Anthony Cormier.
I'm solid. My sources are solid.
Solid!
This reporting is accurate.
So the people are saying heads should roll at BuzzFeed.
No.
You're hurting the news business as a whole. What do you say?
I've been a reporter for 20 years. Wow. My first job was on the loading dock of the Panama City News Herald.
You should have stayed there.
They wouldn't give me a job inside because I was too young and green.
Yeah, I've been
doing
still,
this again and again and again.
You're just old and bad.
The same fundamentals that I learned covering City Hall, covering the police, covering courthouses, that stands today, right? That is, I use those same skills, the same rigor to cover the White House. And we are, this is going to be borne out, Brian. This story is accurate.
What if the sources are just wrong?
They're not.
Not intentionally, not trying to hurt you, but just what if they're wrong?
They're not. I'm confident.
So about that, the Mueller report actually confirms that it's a lie. The Mueller report said Donald Trump did not tell Michael Cohen to lie. And now finally, BuzzFeed is acknowledging their screw up, kinda. They say they're wrong, but it's kind of a weird defense in it all. Editor-in-chief Ben Smith, he came out with a statement, said, "Today, with the release of the Mueller report, we know which characterization Pete Carr," that's a Mueller spokesperson, "was disputing, specifically that the series of interactions between Trump, Cohen, and their lawyers did not, in the prosecutor's view, amount to Trump directing Cohen to lie." Yeah, this is not new. That was literally the crux of your story. That was literally the crux of it. And I love how they go, well, you know, the lawyer, the prosecutors, they're in their view, it didn't amount to Trump directing Cohen to lie. But, you know, in our sources' view, it did. That's really what he's implying. I don't care what your source has to say about anything. I care about what Mueller found out. I care about what the actual evidence suggests. The story was a lie. The story was a lie in a long series of lies that BuzzFeed told, that CNN told, that all these other folks told. And then, of course, remember NBC's Savannah Guthrie, just patting ourselves on the back. You know, this was hard. That was really hard work, but we did it. No. So now where does Donald Trump go? Now at 5:30, we're going to talk with Congressman Dan Newhouse, Republican from the east side of the state. He's going to stop by and we're going to talk about Democrats pushing for impeachment still. Democrats talking about more investigations. Now, we all seem to think on the right that, generally speaking, there is this significant fatigue. General fatigue coming from the American public. But what should Donald Trump do? Ari Fleischer, former White House spokesperson under Bush, he was on Fox News. He said, look, President Trump needs to just move past the Mueller report and just let the Democrats hurt themselves by talking about it so much.
I think it's over unless the White House stops it from being over. That the Democrats are about to walk a plank and fall off of it into the ocean with their conspiracy theories and their truther collusion theories and their obstruction theories. Let them walk that plank and fall into the ocean. But what I'm wrestling with this morning, Bill, is the president's tweets this morning. If I were the president, I would have basically declared victory with the Mueller report and everything that came out and move beyond it and then just let these grassy knoll truthers play with it.
Now, can the president do that? Like, is he actually capable of moving on? Because I have to say, from my perspective, I probably would be equally obsessed with this kind of stuff. He seems clearly like this gets under his skin. That's what is responsible, I think, for the tweets that he keeps sending out. And I think that they are self-defeating tweets. I really, truly wish he wouldn't tweet as much as he does in the way that he does. But you know what? I'm not the president. I didn't just win an election. He did using this style. So maybe he knows more than me. But man, I think there's such a very quick perception that's going to start to develop in the minds of a lot of people who maybe are still on the fence on this, that the Democrats are obsessed. They're obsessed. They're absolutely obsessed, and they can't get over it. And the more that they talk about it while everybody else has moved on, including the president, because he just won this, the more obsessed they seem. My friend Joe Connolly, he is a columnist with the Seattle PI. He just sent me a tweet on this very issue. He's pushing forward with this. Oh, all the criticism. I love Joe to death. On this, he's a crazy person. I love him. I love his stuff. On this, he's obsessed. The more obsessed these people get, the better it is for Donald Trump. And it's one of those scenarios where if he would just keep quiet on this, take the victory lap, don't become a sore winner, I ultimately think it's going to work out more for him. Elizabeth Warren today came out with this announcement that she wants the House to immediately move to impeach the president. Of course, no crimes were committed, let alone a high crime and a misdemeanor. No crime was committed, but they want to let them move forward with it. This will backfire spectacularly. And the craziness about all of this, the Democrats have already embarrassed themselves, promising collusion, promising obstruction. They said, oh, you just wait for the Mueller report. Denny Heck goes on the radio, goes on TV talking about how the president is literally a Manchurian candidate. By the way, did he get back to us in our interview request?
Did not.
Of course not. Of course not. They embarrassed themselves. They overpromised and underdelivered. And some of them can't get out of this hole they dug for themselves, and so they keep digging and digging and digging. I agree with Ari Fleischer. Let them keep digging. Let them keep digging and digging and digging. And while the 2020 candidates on the Democratic side are focused on this, the majority of Americans are going to say, enough is enough. You give us nothing but sore losing. You give us no inspiration whatsoever. You give us heartache. And then they're going to feel even sorrier for the president. Say, you know what? This is a sympathetic president. They're just attacking him. They've got nothing. Don't feed the beast. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. 1-800-465-8770. It's a none better tax resolution hotline.